the Redskins. Hail victory! Praise on the warpath. Fight for all we see.
Green driven back to midfield on the far side. He's got the ball up to the 45, far side 40. A seam to the 35. Waltz a man to the 30. Breaks it to the near side 25. Watch out to the 20. Near side 10. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
This is Burgundy and Gold Flashback. Now, here's Mike Richmond.
You are listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback, where the tradition of a storied NFL franchise, the Washington Redskins, stays alive. I'm Mike Richmond, author of the Redskins Encyclopedia and the Washington Redskins Football Vault. My website is redskinshistorian.com. That's redskinshistorian.com. My guest was a Redskins receiver from 1981 to 1984. Has a ring from the Redskins' win in Super Bowl XVII. He's best remembered for being part of the Smurfs, the Redskins' trio of pint-sized receivers at the time. Virgil C., great to have you on the show.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Very nice seeing you recently at Alumni Day on October 19th against the Titans. So we were talking for a bit on the sidelines there.
Yes, it was good to be back out there on the field, even though I wasn't playing. It's not to be in that atmosphere again.
Mm-hmm. So, are you doing some type of work as an assistant coach now? I know you have worked in the past with Lake Braddock High School in Fairfax County. Are you working with their football team now?
That is correct. I used to work with Lake Braddock High School. Now George Mason University has a club football team, and I'm coaching the club football team. I've been doing that for about 6 or 7 years now.
Oh, a club team, so it's not anything like on the varsity level or anything like that?
It is not varsity level. That is correct.
Do you still own a company or operation called Virgil C. Sports and Activities?
Yes, I do. I run summer camps with kids, teaching them the different sports, football, basketball, soccer, and things of that nature.
Very ambitious. I mean, I think that's great for the kids and obviously keeps them active during the summer.
It keeps them active, but it also keeps me young.
Right. Well, later I want to discuss your playing career here in D.C. and find out really who the smallest Smurf was at the time. I mean, that's one question you asked me on the sidelines there, so we're going to explore that in a little bit. Right now, regarding the current Redskins, they're 3-6 and last place in the NFC East. They're back practicing this week after their bye in preparation for 1-8 Tampa Bay on Sunday. And, of course, they're under first-year coach Jay Gruden. How do you feel about things at this point? Were you expecting more, or are they basically on par with what you were envisioning?
Well, I was actually expecting a little bit more. Basically, the offense is, even though there's a new coach, you still have the players there. The players have to actually step up and do their job, do their assignments, and basically have to perform in the games as well as in practice. So they've got to step it up.
Well, in addition to that, personnel-wise, schematically, what do you think it has been missing thus far?
I think that it's just like with a lot of different things. You got different people making mistakes at the wrong time, and it looks like it's the entire offense. When you have one player mess up here, you have another player mess up there, it just looks like it's the whole thing. So it's just a few things that needs to be tightened up.
So could you honestly say, though, that then they're not that far away from maybe being a 9-7, 10-6 team?
They're probably not that far away, but again, it's they've got to decide who they want to be. If they want to be, you know, just go out and play the game and just go through the motions, they can do that. But if they really want to be successful, they've got to practice at a higher level. They've got to make sure that they know their assignments. They know the adjustments, and they perform those things at the time that's given.
Now, you played for Joe Gibbs his first year here in D.C., 1981.
That's correct. Of course,
we have Jay Gruden, first year Redskins coach. I'm wondering if you can give me a compare and contrast between the two, between Gruden and Gibbs, what you see. Actually, their starts are very similar. Gibbs, of course, started that 0-5. He was even worse than Gruden is doing right now. But if you could compare and contrast a little bit.
Well, I think that both soft-spoken coaches. Let me go back to when we were 0-5, Coach Gibbs brought the team in, and he wrote some guys' names on the board, and he expected more out of those players that he wrote their name on the board. My name was one of them. That means that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. I thought that I was, but evidently I wasn't performing to the best of my ability. So that means I needed to step it up. So I had to look within myself to do better. So I'm pretty sure that Coach Gruden is wanting to do the same thing. He wants these guys who he's chosen. He wants those guys to step up. And they have to make the decision that they're going to step up.
Well, he was noticeably angry after the loss to the Vikings recently, the 29-26 defeat. I mean, you could see it in his face. You could hear it in his voice. He was very annoyed. And maybe that's what the players need. The players need to know that their coach is not happy with them, basically like you're alluding to right now.
They probably do need to know that. And they can go through the motions all they want, and they're going to end up 3-16, or whatever the case may be, but they've got to step up. They've got to perform. They've got to.
Regarding the Redskins receivers, I mean, you have to say DeSean Jackson. I mean, he's playing all-pro caliber right now. What are your thoughts on him? He just knows how to gain that separation.
He's fast. He is fast, and him being able to run the routes the way that he does, and the defense has to respect his speed, and if they don't respect his speed, they're going to get burned every time.
Were you thinking that when the Redskins signed him that because of the way the Eagles let him go after he had the best season of his career last year statistically, that there was something wrong about the signing, possibly?
You know, It could just be the chemistry. He could have been at the wrong place at the wrong time. He may not fit in with that particular scheme as to what they're running in Philly. I don't know all the ins and outs as to what goes on in Philly. But when he comes here to Washington, if he does his job the best that he can do, and includes going through the warm-ups, stretching, everything. Everything he's under a microscope because he did come from Philly. They were all talking about his gang affiliation or whatever. I can understand part of what he's saying. He has friends who are still gang affiliated. At least that's what was reported in some of the articles. I mean, there are guys that I go home, my hometown with, and I still see certain people. I say hi and this, that, and the other. That doesn't mean I go out and I do the things that they do. That doesn't mean that he goes out and he does the things that they do.
Do you think
that? I mean, you say hi, you be cordial to everybody.
So do you think that that's what the case has been with him? He's just sort of like acquaintances with these people?
I'm assuming that, being that I don't know him that well. I'm just saying that people have to look at the whole picture, not just part of it. They people think gang, oh, he's in a gang. We don't know. I don't know that. Unless he said he's in a gang, then that's for those people who want to talk about that kind of stuff.
Well, on the field thus far, I mean, he's been a model citizen, and I mean, he's been all business out there. The guy's against the Vikings alone, he had 4 catches for 120 yards. He's exceeded 100 yards receiving in 5 games this season, which leads the league. He's just been amazing. So I think the Redskins have gotten everything out of him and more that they expected.
And I think they're going to get some more things to him. Actually, I remember him getting like a reverse or something up in Philly. I'm pretty sure that's going to be, you know, added into our mix as well. I mean, you have an explosive person, use him.
Well, he certainly burned them in the game against the Eagles earlier this season. He had that 80-yard bomb from Kirk Cousins, so that was really nice to see. Well, it's been a great conversation thus far, but we need to go to break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about your playing career. Here's This Week in Redskins History.
Hey, it's Mike Richmond, the official Redskins historian and author of the Washington Redskins Football Vault and the Redskins Encyclopedia. From the pages of my books comes This Week in Redskins History. On November 17, 1991, the Redskins routed the Steelers 41-14 to become the first team since the 1985 Bears to start a season with 11 straight wins and the first to clinch a playoff berth in 1991. Quarterback Mark Rippon completed 21 passes for 325 yards and 2 touchdowns, and receiver Art Monk had 8 catches for 130 yards and a TD. Coach Joe Gibbs later said he felt like being on, quote, a dream ride, but he came back to earth the following week when Dallas snapped the win streak. That was just a blip on the road to glory. The Skins finished 14-2, matching the franchise record for regular season wins, and captured Super Bowl 26. For more on Redskins history, check out my website at redskinshistorian.com. That's redskinshistorian.com. I'm Mike Richmond for This Week in Redskins History.
Welcome back to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. I'm Redskins historian Mike Richmond, back with Virgil C., a Redskins receiver in the 1980s and a member of the Smurfs. Virgil, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you, and I'm glad you invited me here.
Very happy to have you. So regarding your background, history as a football player, you're from the state of Georgia. You played your college ball at Troy State, though, in Alabama. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And you were drafted in the 10th round in 1980 by Denver, but you didn't sign with the Redskins until 1981. I was just wondering if you could fill in the blanks there. Were you put on the taxi squad by the Broncos?
No, they didn't have taxi squad back in that time frame. I was released in training camp by Denver, and I went back to Montgomery, Alabama at that time, and I was working at a department store and keeping myself in shape. That's basically what I was doing at that time.
So how did it play out in terms of your signing with the Redskins? Did you get a call from Bobby Beathard, for instance?
I can't remember if it was Bobby or not, but I'm pretty sure it was. I had tryouts with a couple other teams, and they only wanted me to either be a return guy or a receiver. And Washington was going to give me the opportunity to be either both a return specialist and a receiver. So my agent and I decided that Washington was the best place for me to try. So that's what we did.
Mm-hmm. So I take it you signed, what was it, in the spring or?
It was probably in the winter time, because if I remember, we had after the draft, we had the mini camps, and did all the workouts and things there.
So you knew already that Joe Gibbs was in place, and he had been the offensive coordinator, obviously, with the Chargers, which set so many records offensively prior to him coming. Now, as far as your productivity, 1981 was your greatest season in the NFL. You made 26 of your 43 career catches. Did Gibbs work one-on-one with you or any of the other coaches, or what led to that rise in your play?
Well, my rookie season, I started the last half of my rookie season at receiver opposite of Art Monk, who's one of the greatest receivers of all time. Now, cause I was opposite of Art, and I got passes thrown to me by Theismann, and things just worked well at that time. The following year, there was draft choices that came in. And I lost my starting position, but I still had an opportunity to go in the games from time to time and make plays here and there for the next couple of years. That's pretty much what it was.
Right, and you were also returning punts and kickoffs.
When Mike Nams wasn't returning punts, I was allowed to return a couple of punts.
And that was a prolific offense that you played on in 1981. And in the ensuing years, 81, for instance, it set team records, 5,623 yards of offense, first downs, 334. And the point total, 347, was only four short of the team record. Tell me about playing on that offense. How did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. I mean, with the offense that we had, with the adjustments that you were allowed to do, it seems like the defense couldn't be right in what they chose to do. If they came up to press us, we could, on certain routes, we could run a fade on them, so we had to be able to get off the line of scrimmage. And if they backed out, we'd just run our regular routes. And so basically the defense couldn't be right in whatever they decided to do. We just had to, you know, do our job.
Well, that season, of course, set the tone for the Redskins' Super Bowl season the following year. After losing your first five games, you won eight of your last 11 to finish 8-8, and then, of course, you won Super Bowl 17 in the 1982 season. And speaking of that season, that was the creation of the subgroups that became so lovable in the D.C. area, the Hogs, the Fun Bunch, and the Smurfs. And, of course, you were one of the Smurfs, Charlie Brown, Alvin Garrett, and Virgil C. So, the answer that everybody has been waiting for, who was the smallest Smurf?
Who was the smallest Smurf? That would happen to be Alvin Garrett. He is the shortest Smurf by a long shot.
I have him at 5'7", or 5'7", during his playing days. Was he 5'7"?
He was actually 5'7.5". He was actually 5'7.5".
And what did you play at?
I towered him at 5'7.75".
And did you two get into any type of competition, friendly competition, in terms of, you know, battling for who was really the smallest?
Oh, we still do that today.
So, regarding the creation of the Smurfs, I mean, who was behind that? Tell me about the evolution of it.
Well, it actually started with Terry Metcalf. He came up with the name Smurf. Basically, you know, in a locker room, you get guys, you know, having fun, poking fun at each other, and the guy who, like I said, it was Terry Metcalf. He would. I'd call him Fidget. He called me a Smurf this particular day, and I said, "Smurf? What is that?" He says, "You don't know anything about the Smurfs?" I said, "No, not at all." So he said, "Go home Saturday morning and watch the Smurfs." So I did this one particular Saturday. I had a chance to go out and I had a chance to see what these Smurfs were. And I just cracked up laughing when I saw what it was, because he had small kids. So he was able to, you know, see the cartoon shows with his kids, and he was able to come up with one that topped all of them, and that name stuck with me.
So it was Terry Metcalf. Was Terry Metcalf, he was on the Redskins in 1982?
Yes.
And so he was deriving it from the cartoon show with the characters and the tiny blue-skinned characters dressed in the white trousers? And
that is correct. Papa Smurf and Gargamel and the whole nine yards. He was behind that.
Now, Alvin Garrett, we know he had a great playoff run in 1982. He caught five touchdowns, 15 total catches in that postseason that ended, of course, with your win over the Dolphins in Super Bowl 17. But I understand that prior to the Super Bowl, the Smurfs went to Disneyland. And you actually posed for pictures with the real Smurfs. Is that true?
Well, there was media day, and they came over to they had the big Smurf, and we took pictures. There was myself, Alvin, and Charlie. We took pictures with the Smurf. I actually have a picture of that. It's not in color, but I actually have a picture of it with the Smurf and Charlie and Alvin and myself.
Now, were you also part of the Fun Bunch? I think I remember you were.
Yes.
And that was
part of the fun much as well.
Right, and that was the group that slapped high fives in the end zone.
Yes, it is.
Do you think that a group like the Fun Bunch could exist today with the tight rules on celebrating and taunting in the end zone after touchdowns?
Well, it's no different than what these guys doing all these other dances. I mean, we did ours as a group within ourselves, celebrating the score of one of our teammates. I mean, we didn't do any taunting of anybody. We got off to the side and did our dance, jumped, and then we went to the sideline. We didn't look at anybody else. We were inside the, and we did our thing, jumped, and moved off to the sideline.
I remember in a 1983 game, a 31-10 Redskins win over the Cowboys in Dallas, that the Cowboys were so frustrated, there were a number of things the Redskins did to really get under their skin that game, that after one Redskins touchdown, some of the Cowboys' defensive backs tried to break up the Fun Bunch in the end zone. I think maybe it was Everson Walls and one of the other members of the Cowboys secondary. Were you part of the Fun Bunch when they were jumping?
Yes, I was in that end zone, and I jumped as well. From my understanding, in one of their meetings, something was said about no one is going to celebrate in our end zones. Well, our coach didn't tell us that. So we got out, we scored, and we did our dance.
They were just so frustrated that game. It was there was that incident even on the sidelines when Tom Landry was telling Danny White not to go for it on fourth down. You stop them. That really messed them up. And then I think there was another incident where Tony Dorsett threw the ball at the head of Darryl Grant.
Yes, yes.
Right.
I mean, as you said, they were frustrated all over the place. I mean, there is nothing that they could do to stop what we did.
Oh, that was a great, great Redskins team. And in fact, I think it was only second best to the 91 team. You guys went on to play in Super Bowl 18 that year against the Raiders. Regarding the end of your career, the last season with the Redskins was 1984. Were you traded to Atlanta during that season?
I was not traded. I was released after the 12th game. And So I missed playing during week 13, I believe it was. And after that, Dan Henning, who was the head coach down in Atlanta, gave me a call, and I went down and finished out the season down there in Atlanta.
And then you called it quits from the NFL.
I called it quits very shortly after that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Virgil, I want to say this has been a lot of fun talking to you, and I love the conversation about the Smurfs and the Fun Bunch and the Hogs. I don't think teams have that type of identity today. It's not really that fun-loving type of identity anymore. It's more of like a corporate image.
Yeah, the thing about it, I think the group that I was with, we cared about each other. We didn't care about who scored the touchdown. We wanted to win, and we knew that if I did my job, they had to react to me. And that means that if that is the case, somebody else is going to be open. So everybody had to do their job 100%. No slacking off. You got to do your job every single time.
That's the approach that all professional athletes should take. And
yes.
We just have to keep our fingers crossed that this Redskins squad will pick up on that at some point.
I hope they do. And I hope they do it this week during practice so it can show up in the game.
I hope so, too. Well, thank you again, and I'm sure we'll cross paths at upcoming Redskins alumni events. And many thanks to my audience for listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback, and thanks to my producer, Mike Engel, for his work running the board. I'm Mike Richman. My website is RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. For now, hail to the Redskins.
Hail to the Redskins.